Welcome to episode 6. Today we'll be ranting, telling you about what we've been loving, back to school edition, and what we're looking forward to. We're coming to you from Zoom, so forgive us for any sound issues. We hope your timetables haven't screwed you over too much and you're excited for the year ahead.
Okay, so Zara, I'm going to start with you. As always, are we ranting or raving?
Oh, raving. We are raving.
Okay, so as always, you have 1 minute, starting now.
I'm ranting, no, raving about Dolly Parton's America. This is a podcast by Dad Admiral Murad. Don't know how you pronounce his name. I think that was right. But basically, Dolly Parton is one of the world's most uncontroversial people. Like, I think she's second in the world of just everyone tends to love her. And so this podcast goes into like incredible detail about what it is about Dolly Parton that does this. Like it's a syndrome or something, like something that she cultivates that makes her just across the board lovable. And you go to one of her concerts and it's like the most diverse place in America to be, right? When you were talking about how divided that country is at the moment, you have this one woman who will unite the North and the South, the Democrats.
Stop. I feel like you were getting to the crux of your point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. I almost feel like I should redo the rant because we didn't even get into the... But mainly, my point is that we're talking about a woman who's maybe on purpose, but kind of by accident, managed to do something really phenomenal. Are you guys Dolly Parton fans?
I am such a big Dolly Parton fan. I was so excited when I heard we were going to be talking about her today. I'm only about halfway through that podcast series because it is so delicious. I just don't want to do it when I'm doing other activities. I feel like I just need to sit down and listen to them whole. But yeah, she is incredible. And I think you're so right, like the diversity. She's got such a big gay fan base and also such a big like conservative Southern fan base, urban, suburban. And I think it's because she's so earnest and so sincere. And I think she just fully distills like emotion without thinking about how it makes her look or if she's cool enough or if she's portraying it in a way. It's just there and everyone can relate. She is incredible. I mean, she's done so many. Have you heard about her imagination library?
Yeah. So cool. A big staple, and especially Southern states. It's a way that most... I don't want to say statistically most, but certainly in the podcast, it comes across that most kids growing up in the South in the United States, a lot of their formative experiences with books, their first experiences with books, comes from this, you know, imagination library, which is an initiative that she started, basically getting books out to kids who and schools that don't to have access to them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and it's basically like 150 million books she's given out now. And it's not just in Southern America, it's like in Northern England. So it's in like parts of South Yorkshire, near where I grew up. There are whole communities, whole schools, really deprived areas of kids.
That's incredible.
Have an entire range. So like you get, I don't know how many a term at school. And then by the end of it, you've got this full kind of collection of books that you read, and Dolly does a special message for everybody at the end. And again, she's such a fucking icon, and she doesn't publicize that. It's not, you know, that well known. I was so surprised when like someone that I knew when I was working at a museum when I was back home was just like, oh yeah, like we work with so many kids who basically learn to read from the scheme, and it's in Yorkshire.
And all that's the way incredible
from, yeah,
all the way from, yeah,
Tennessee.
She's also got her own like theme park as well, like
Dolly World. Dolly World. So one of the episodes actually takes place there, and they end up going to where she grew up. So I don't know a lot about, well, there are so many aspects to this, right? You touch on how she manages to be incredibly political without being political. Like she'll say,
she's not partisan.
She's not partisan, she's not a feminist, and yet 9 to 5, right? Like there are these things that she does that you're like, well, and even the way that she'll behave on like talk shows and the way that she presents herself, it's inherently like she is a feminist icon without you know, putting that word to her. Exactly. Because again, that's kind of how she doesn't exclude anyone from her fan base. She doesn't want to make anyone feel ostracized. What I was going to say about her theme park is in the episode that takes place at her theme park, they also go to her family home, which is very like Smoky Mountains and quaint and kind of very authentic, but also really rich in kind of stereotypes of what the South is and what the South was. And then we hear from a group of students who are studying a course called Dolly Parton's America. And you hear from a bunch of Southern kids, or like kids from the South, about how the ways in which she enforces stereotypes that are problematic and ones that are good, and whether she is inherently good for the South or bad for the South. And then you hear about the history of the South and Southern hillbilly stereotypes or rednecks, and how hillbillies were actually people who'd been freed from slavery to be integrated into society better, or like they were actually progressive and liberal, and that now hillbilly has become synonymous with something that is backward and ancient. And you just learn a lot, but you also learn to love her. Like, if all you know about her is Jolene and, you know, I Will Always Love You and 9 to 5, like if that's all you've got to go off of before you listen to this podcast, that's absolutely fine, because you're gonna learn like everything and more. And just
incredible. And even kind of what you were saying about her theme park, like from a financial perspective, like all the communities that she fully funds the whole place, like because everyone there is basically employed in her stuff. And she's incredible. And how she's like that ultra feminine ideal, but also clearly like very competent and in control of her own stuff, and really in control of her own image, like not being a passive observer. Although by all accounts, the kind of the way she looks is the like dumb blonde quotation mark stereotype, like big boobs, big peroxide hair, but like that's so knowing, like there's a reason she did that, and because she knows it's profitable, and she knows there's a huge amount of truth to be found in that kind of behavior and that kind of presentation. And oh, I love her.
It's great. Amber, honestly, I've recommended it to about 20 people.
No, I'll definitely give it a listen. Like my first introduction really to like Dolly Parton outside of the, you know, Jolene and 9 to 5 thing was actually through Graham Norton, funnily enough. Okay. So I didn't realize they've been lifelong friends since a really young age. And he always said that he came from a really small village in Ireland, and he met Dolly Parton, who was such a liberal woman, and he's obviously gay, and he said that when he was really young, like it was a little bit of a struggle for him because his family was quite conservative, and he was saying that he doesn't think if it wasn't for her, he probably wouldn't have embraced it as much as he did, and probably wouldn't have landed maybe even some of his roles in like Father Ted and later on maybe even like the Graham Norton show. And I remember seeing this like music video that Graham and Dolly Parton made. It was actually in Dolly Parton's theme park. And I don't know how old Graham was. He must have been like early 20s. I need to find this video and show it to you. But that was really my first experience of Dolly Parton. So I always knew she was a massive campaigner for like LGBT rights and things like that. And I just thought, what a woman to have such an influence on someone's life like that, you know? And they still remain lifelong friends. So it's great to see as well.
That's so sweet. So the guy who does the podcast, Jad, his family's from Lebanon, and his father is a doctor who met Dolly that way, and now the guy who does the podcast, his father and Dolly are like mates, like proper mates. But again, you'd hear, it's so funny that Graham Norton had that relationship with her, because you hear about Jad's father having very similar relationship with her, as did a bunch of people from around the world. There's this singer who's growing up, this black female singer growing up in a village that is very different to the Smoky Mountains, and yet will sing Dolly Parton songs and have a serious emotional attachment to her. So she's just managed to spread something that seems so, you know, personal and private, and we'll sing about the South, and yet everyone around the world gets like it hits them properly, you know. I think it's fascinating. But you said, Amber, that she's like this mass champion for LGBTQ rights, but again, it's not explicit. And so all of her like Christian fan base, and the fact that she's quite spiritual herself, no one's got a problem with her. Basically, everyone, Dolly Parton's America, it's everywhere where you listen to podcasts. If you want something that makes you feel hopeful and great and in awe of a woman who's done so much at a time where, and space where, she just shouldn't have been able to do that. Amber, let's switch over to you. What have you been loving recently? What's been going on?
So because nothing is being released, I've had to resort to Netflix for a lot of my entertainment. I actually came across this film that I thought was very interesting and quite different to what I'm used to seeing. It's called The Devil All the Time. It's a psychological thriller which explores themes of evil, religion, abuse of power, particularly in the church. And it was actually produced by Jake Gyllenhaal, so nice to see that he's branching out a bit. It's incredibly star-studded, like Robert Pattinson, who I'm glad to see is branching out from like Dead End films. Tom Holland, Sebastian Stan, Eliza Scanlon, I could go on for the entire time. It's basically the Avengers, but kind of with a horror twist, except they're not fighting for anything. They're kind of all trying to go against this brainwashing of like fornicating preachers, which is Robert Pattinson, ironically. Misguided sacrifices, these kind of torturous family legacies. It gets really gruesome at times, so if you're a bit queasy, I would not recommend. And it kind of explores different family stories. It's one of those films that has a lot of little bubbles, and then it comes together at the end, and you can see how each of the stories like relates to each other. It's kind of like Pulp Fiction meets gothic horror. That's how I'd sum it up. And it is a very interesting film, because you would think that it wouldn't make sense on the screen. It's originally a book by Donald Ray Pollock, who actually narrates throughout the film. So he provides this really nice structure throughout, because sometimes when you've got, it works well in books when you've got chapters of different stories, but then you put it on a film and nothing makes sense. You're like, okay, so who's this now? Who's that? Don't understand how that works. But then you've got this lovely narration going on in the background, very nice and soothing, which kind of does help to move the story along and help you understand the interrelationships. So it was something very different. Acting was incredible all round. I thought it was hilarious how it was based in Southern America and they got two British actors to play the lead. Fantastic. But yeah, I definitely recommend. It's a good watch.
So is this set in modern day America?
That is an interesting question. You would think it is, but it's kind of like it's set in a rural village. So I think it's kind of meant to be like a microcosm of wider society, with religion right. as like the overarching umbrella. So it could be set in any time frame. I mean, the dress probably, it's probably like post-war time. I think that's probably when it's meant to be set. But it could be at any moment. I think that's what the film is trying to get at. Like, it's something that we're still probably experiencing. There are very heavily religious families, some that do even abuse power. And probably not so much anymore, but you know, it does tackle quite important themes that we think are probably very much in the past, but really aren't.
Yeah. I mean, so you're calling it a horror, but there's not like an active, is religion the villain?
So when I say horror, I don't mean like it's a jump scare horror. It's just right. It's quite a brutal film. I mean, it tackles like occasionally torture, sacrifices. There's a scene where a man loses his wife due to cancer, and he turns to religion to try and find answers for this. And he starts reading the Bible. This preacher is completely misguided, teaches him the completely wrong things. And he starts to believe that by sacrificing, he'll get his wife back. So he takes his son's dog and hangs it up on the village square, like sacrifices it. Things like that. It's quite gruesome in that sense. But yeah, it's not horror in the most traditional sense, no.
Right. I mean, so the reason I'm asking, frankly, is not for any like intellectual reason. It's because like Coraline scares me and I've seen the trailer and I want to watch the film. But like, if I'm going to be scared, I can't do it. Religions, especially religion in America, I don't know, maybe this is going to be a very American episode. But religion in America is, it's a whole other thing, I think.
It is, and I think it comes across a lot in the film, and I don't really want to say this, but in the film it kind of feels like a cult. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to get at in the film. When it's taken to such extremes, and you have the wrong people with the wrong morals teaching people, and I think it shows this shows how important but also fragile something like religion is. And actually, if it's taught badly, like, it can have really bad psychological impacts.
No, I was going to say, like, it's so interesting. I mean, like, what you were saying, the themes that are, like, initially suggested by lots of religions, not necessarily the practicing of them now, but just in general, like, of sacrifice, of, like, self-sacrifice to serve a higher goal. Like, so many of those things are so, like, almost made for drama. Like, they're such interesting things that lend themselves so well. So, like, that just sounds like a really interesting premise, to have a horror film, or, you know, a kind of, like, scary film for likes of me who don't watch anything more than a PG. But, but centred not around kind of, like, a villain with an axe, but, like, more of, like, the evils of themes and ideas and principles that spiral out of control. That is really fascinating, especially in America.
Yeah, I mean, we were watching the film, I was watching it with my parents, and we were going, oh my God, this person's insane. Like, throughout the film, you're led to believe, oh my God, this person's mad, because they've been so brainwashed, because they're prioritising this thing that they don't even know what it is, because it's not religion, it's so far away from religion. You know, it's a crazy film, a bit of a slow burner, but it does definitely make you reflect and think on like the side effects, I guess, of religion taught badly.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think something that really, really grinds my gears, I've been saying that a lot recently, and I've decided I enjoy it, but something that really does grind my gears is, you know, and again, this does kind of come back to America, because I don't think that there are many, I don't know, developed, you know, the countries with the largest economies, if you think of the world's biggest economies, you don't really have politics and religion interact in a meaningful way. The idea is that in modern Western society, those are two separate things, right? Because we hate it when, you know, Saudi does it, we hate it when Iran does it, but when the US does it, and when you went, let's forget on like a big scale, on like a little maybe village or town situation where like hierarchy and power is given to people with moral ground or like religious ground, when actually their paths to becoming religious and their paths to getting power, those two things aren't always noble or like sensible. That's where it does become a concern, is like, yes, religion can teach you how to live, but if religion is all that there is, and if it's so deeply entrenched in a society, then like it can get, and it's then hard to, I guess, break out of. I mean, I haven't seen this film, but I can imagine that it's taking, you know, parts of extremes that have happened in America, and
yeah, I'm sure these events have happened. Like, I wouldn't put it past people to think like this. I really wouldn't. And I think that leads nicely on to the next section, kind of staying with America and probably just as problematic, the presidential debate. Molly,
Literally on the topic of American horror films dragging out the very worst of the values of that particular failing project.
Jesus.
We've decided that it would be interesting and fun for all involved to talk about the debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, which was Wednesday evening, I believe, in America. Me and my flatmate were going to stay up. It was like 9 Eastern time, so it was 2 a.m. British time. We were going to stay up and watch, and at about midnight, we decided not to. I think we definitely dodged a bullet, because I watched it the next day and it was quite frankly the most just, it was incoherent. It was like, it should have been the easiest job in the world to resoundingly defeat Donald Trump at a debate, an exchange of words. It's so easy to be the superior linguist to that man. But the Democratic nominee out of a country 300 million could not muster himself to that task. I don't know about you guys, but I'm just really watching this all with such kind of resigned. I think what was interesting, and especially, you know, the three of us, and presumably the listeners, I've used plural there, hopefully, to this podcast, is we're all at LSE. So all the stuff we study is, you know, politics, international relations, geography, whatever. Like, these institutions, so whether it's like the Supreme Court, debates, are a belief system in themselves. Like, going back to what we're talking about religion, like, this is what we study, this is what we respect. I mean, all the time you learn about the etiquette of debates, and, you know, if you wear the wrong color suit, if you don't shake the hand, if you talk over, if you don't get these talking points in. And they were the informal rules and they governed everything, and now they don't exist. So niceties don't exist, and people, there is no respect for these institutions left. And it's like, what do we have? And it's not to have some kind of protracted existential discovery on this podcast, but it's a really fascinating and also sad and confusing thing to look at when you realize that, like, potentially a lot of shit was going on behind the scenes, but it was given this veneer of respectability and liberalism. And now the veneer's gone. You see all the stuff. So were we the kind of like naive people to be tricked by that kind of, you know, Obama's droning people, but he danced on Ellen last week.
I mean, so I woke up, I'm in Hong Kong, by the way, listeners, again, presuming there's more than one, I'm in Hong Kong. So I woke up and the first thing I watched was the debate, which was not a great start to my morning. I'm going to be honest, it was 9 a.m. I mean, on a kind of tying in everything else, about it's been such an American-centric episode, which is, I mean, all these grand narratives about America, whether it's like the thing that unites all of them around Dolly Parton, or whether it's the religious stuff that Jake Gyllenhaal's betraying as a cult, or, you know, Joe Biden kind of like forgetting facts in front of like a, you know, that horrible blue screen they bring out with the Constitution, like one of those bad fonts you got on Word, like all of these things.
Clip art.
This is all what America is. Do you know what I mean? And if we're an arts and culture podcast, we're looking at it. These are the byproducts of it as a country.
I mean, look, I grew up as a Muslim person while the Iraq War was happening. Like, it was, me and America were never going to have a great relationship. Plenty of good things in America, Dolly Parton being one of them.
I tell you what, the failure of Biden as a candidate. You know, he did the kind of thing where it was like, will you just shut up, man? In the middle of it, and like, that was probably powerful, definitely necessary, but the fact that within like seconds of that there was like a t-shirt for $27.99 on the Biden Harris thing that said, "Will you just shut up, man," in some kind of like comics, like good font, like being sort of like this, like, it's what I'm saying, like liberalism, like the liberal wing of the Democratic Party is so doomed to failure if you're just marketing things to like upper middle class millennials to wear at brunch. Like, that is not the basis they need to talk to. And it's fine, that's a part of it. I'm not doing down that group at all. But if they're the only cleavage you're appealing to, if that's the only, if you're valuing outwards that appeals to those rather than any kind of substance, like, he had nothing really to respond to Trump with. It was just very much kind of like, we'll mediate some of the worst things you're doing, but look how badly you're behaving. But people don't care. People voted for him in 2016 and he behaved worse. Leaving America now, very briefly, for the end of our episode. Amber, could you give us an insight into what's happening in London, LSE, arts and culture related?
Yeah, so just starting with London, I personally am very excited for the London Film Festival. I just started this morning, so I'll be watching a series of films for probably the next 2 weeks, alongside my lectures, of course. But yeah, there is an incredible lineup this year. I mean, films starring Frances McDormand, who's like a personal favourite of mine, Colin Firth, Stanley Tucci, love them all. So hopefully we've got some nice arts and culture coming through there. And also, just to bring it back to LSE, Be The Sound are doing the LSE Starter Pack. So if you want some more information, particularly freshers, on how to get involved, how to meet people, even questions like sex, staying safe, living in London, anything like that, even if you're a second or third year and you still want to tune in, go for it, have some useful tips in there.
Yeah, just quick shout out to all of the sad freshers. Not a fun time. I don't envy you at all.
No, we're all going to start singing the Star Spangled Banner.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
This has been the Last Damn Word on October.
The wonderful music has been by Ashley Leo Margering. We've been Amber, Molly and Zara.
See you next month for our hot takes on November.